Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Thanks so much for joining me today. And we're back on Creating Change. This is Doug Foresta, and I'm so very, very happy to have with me today Dr. Damon Raskin, who works at Cliffside Malibu, and he's going to be talking today. For those of you that that are fans of the show, you'll remember we've interviewed Constance Scharf as well as Richard Tate from Cliffside Malibu, and today we're going to be talking about addiction in the elderly. And just to say a little bit about Dr. Raskin, we'll bring him on. He's been spending the last 16 years doing what he loves. He's a board-certified internist, and he's dedicated his career to helping his patients through both minor and major medical interventions. And for the past 10 years, he specialized in working in addiction detoxification. And he first became involved with addiction medicine when he was hired as a consultant at a rehab center in Southern California before moving on to Cliffside Malibu as one of their medical specialists. And for more information also, I definitely encourage you to go to www.cliffsidemalibu.com. And Dr. Raskin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you. So yeah, I thought maybe we could start with a little bit about sort of something that it seems like something that people don't want to think about, which is the idea that, you know, that that elderly people or seniors might actually have that addiction might be a problem in that population. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about that.
Sure. So addiction is basically a universal problem that I see in all age groups, from young patients, adolescents. Of course, we all hear about the teen celebrities that get addicted. But what is missing, what's sort of hidden in the shadows, are my elderly patients who have, in fact, a bigger problem than some of the younger people, just because they can't compensate. They have a lot of other comorbid problems along with their addiction, which makes them just very, very vulnerable. This population is really at risk for high degrees of accidents and death.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was looking at how one of the things that one of the facts here that I was looking at was that the demographic most likely to binge drink is people over 65, and that I would have never thought that. I would have thought it was college students, or I never would have thought that population.
Right. No. Well, I see it all the time. In fact, in the elderly population, we see a lot of depression, and hand in hand with this depression, we do see these patients going on binge drinking episodes. The other problem that they have is prescription drugs, and these are drugs actually given to them by their doctors for conditions like anxiety or insomnia, but yet they're overusing them and they're combining them in ways that make them extremely dangerous for the elderly.
It's really interesting because it's a different narrative about addiction. You know, we have sort of, I mean, when I, you know, there's sort of this dominant narrative about addiction, about people, about addiction, you know, people sneaking around, you know, and doing drug deals and sort of what we see on TV. And this is sort of, it does seem like it would be able to be more in the shadows because, like you said, these are things that doctors are prescribing. These are people who probably, they're able to stay in their own house and do this.
Exactly. They're getting, the problem is in their medicine cabinet. In fact, sometimes they'll have a couple different doctors, they'll have specialists, as well as their general doctors, and they're all getting different prescriptions, and they're sort of using them in ways that lead to an addiction.
So I'm curious about, like, what would be different in terms of intervening with someone who's, you know, someone who's older, in terms of, you know, you'd already, you know, spoke about one of the issues being the comorbidity, you know, of other problems. But I'm wondering, like, what would be some differences in terms of how you intervene with older adults versus, let's say, younger adults.
For example, today I just admitted a patient. He's 89 years old, and he does binge drink. And he was just admitted to the hospital because he had a fainting episode while he was at a dinner dance. He had a few too many drinks. He had some lung problems and some heart problems and high blood pressure. And he ended up in the hospital because he was fainted and the ambulance came. And this is a prime time for intervention in this type of patient because they're already in a hospital setting. Social workers can help, family members can help, and the patient really is at the mercy of everyone getting him back to his home, because his goal is to get back to home and not to be placed in a nursing home or in assisted living. So, you know, oftentimes they'll say, okay, well, whatever I need to do, I'm gonna do so that I can get back home. If that means to go to a rehab facility, if that means to go to outpatient therapy, but going to a place like Cliffside Malibu, where they're getting intensive therapy along with medical supervised detoxification, is a great idea for the elderly patients as well.
Which is a really good point. I mean, I wonder whether does that put in another. I wonder if that's sort of another layer of resistance that people have.
Yeah, there is definitely as the patient ages, there's definitely a lot more resistance on some part from the patient. But eventually, they come to the conclusion that they definitely need the help. I recently admitted a patient who was an opiate abuser and dependent. For years and years. I mean, she has other medical problems, including chronic pain syndromes and fibromyalgia. She's in her 60s. She's been on opiates for more than 30 years. And finally, after going to the hospital for like the 16th time because of overdose, the family just had enough and said, you're not coming back home until you get the help you need. She went to Cliffside Malibu. She's currently in recovery now. It's been several months. And she is just so happy that she got her life back and has her family back.
That's wonderful. I mean, one of the things that's so nice about, you know, from what I've gotten to know about Cliffside Malibu, just from, you know, from interviewing Richard Tate and from some other wonderful people that work there, is that you really work with the individuals for what they need. Like, it's based on a stages of change model. It's not like a cookie cutter. Everybody gets the same thing.
Right, and that's what these patients need, especially the older patients who are used to doing things their own way. They're not going to go with a cookie-cutter approach. They really want the individual attention. They all have different medical problems. They all have different approaches. But what they have in common is the addiction. So the therapy is really customized to them, and that's really what leads to the success of these patients. I agree.
So I'm curious though about, you brought something up about chronic, you know, the chronic pain, and many times, you know, many times people are prescribed, you know, that's how they start, you know, abusing Percocet or Vicodin or Oxycontin or, you know, whatever pain medication it may be. How do you deal with, for example, somebody that really legitimately, you know, is older, has chronic pain, but is also abusing their pain medication?
So that's really the key there, is to try to figure out how to help these patients when they do have legitimate pain, but yet stay away from the opiate narcotics and the problems that go along with opiate dependence. But what's nice now is we do have medications that are available for patients that can help with pain, that are not addicting, that are non-narcotic. Certain types of antidepressants have pain qualities. There are other types of neuropathic pain agents, like gabapentin, another one called Lyrica, which can help with pain. In addition, there are procedures that can be done to help with pain. Epidural injections, which are basically shots that can put pain medicine into the nerves so that patients can get either temporarily or prolonged relief from things like that. So there are a lot of different ways that need to be customized to the patient that can help with pain that lead them down to the road to getting off of the narcotic or the addicting substance.
What are some ways in which if someone hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry about that. There was some static there for a moment. But I just wanted to also, I was curious about what are some of the signs, let's say if somebody, you know, has a loved one that they're concerned about, maybe they don't, you know, they may not live with them, so they're not, you know, they're not necessarily seeing them every moment, but what are some things to look out for, maybe that loved ones can look out for, that might be red flags that someone in their life, and, you know, maybe their grandparent, their parent, might be abusing their medication or suffering from an addiction?
Sure. I think that there are a lot of red flags that people or family members should look out for, especially in the elderly patients, but patients who isolate themselves, patients who don't want to go out of the house, who are having changes in their appearance, are not taking care of themselves. If you see a patient or a family member who used to like to go out and be active or take walks and no longer is doing those things, that could be a big red flag. Of course, we always worry about depression, which oftentimes goes hand in hand with addiction. So you want to look out for that as well. Look out for signs that the patient is you know, taking inappropriate naps or falling asleep or slurring their words or just not making sense. And again, this in elderly patients could be a number of things. It could be infection or other types of metabolic diseases. But don't forget about addiction, because this is more common than we think in this population.
Well, it's so interesting you say that, because as you were saying that, I was thinking about how you know, if I saw a young man walking down the street and he was slurring his words and all over the place, the first thought I would probably have is that he's impaired, you know, that he's probably impaired by something, whether it's alcohol or drugs. But if I saw like an elderly person walking down the street, confused, slurring their words, that's not the first thing that would come to my mind. I might be thinking, you know, this person might be suffering from dementia or some type of something else, but it wouldn't necessarily, addiction wouldn't be what pops in my mind.
Exactly. And that's one of the key things to remember. I think that's why it's great that we're talking about this.
Yeah. No, I think that's really important. I do think that listeners who have loved ones that, you know, this might really spark. I think it's great that really starting to spark that conversation in people, because there is this sort of narrative that, you know, elderly people don't get addicted to alcohol and drugs. I mean, that's just unseemly.
Right. Exactly. And again, these elderly patients are very vulnerable. Because they're often living alone, they often have other issues, as you talked about, they're often suffering from other medical conditions. So it's easy for them to want to escape their pain, whether it's mental pain or physical pain, and start getting into the booze and the other drugs that they may have.
So I'm curious too, I mean, what are some of the things, you know, obviously we're talking about some of the problem, but obviously, you know, you seem to really have a passion for what you do, and I'm curious about sort of, What is it about the work that you do that you really? What are the things that you enjoy most about what you do and the work you do at Cliffside Malibu?
I think it's so gratifying when you're able to have the patient finally realize that they need to stop their behaviors, make some changes, and then really for me, the excitement is when I see the patient 30 days later, 60 days later. They're realizing how much they missed in their life and how valuable the relationships that they are, that they have with their family members, with their friends, that they were missing out on. And they're so thankful to me for helping them at least get through that suffering, that pain, that initial discomfort. Often patients are so scared when they first come in to a place like Cliffside Malibu because they're so worried about the possibility of insomnia or seizures or you know, worsening pain because of withdrawals. And when I can hopefully, get them under control and help them be comfortable through that process, that's really where I can make a huge difference, and that is very gratifying.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I do think, like I said, I mean, one of the things that I just love about, you know, from what I've gotten to learn about Cliffside Malibu is this piece about how, you know, that working with actually, that's sort of another segue thing you can talk about is sort of, I know that one of the big things too at Cliffside Malibu is sort of working with the stages of change model and sort of meeting people where they are. And I'm curious about sort of maybe how that factors into to your work with older adults.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, some older adults are ready.
Right.
They realize how long they've had a problem and are ready to change. And some of them are still at the very beginning. So even if they're in, you know, the older years, they're still at the beginning. They still don't necessarily have the insight that they need help. They're there because of pressure, and those patients will take a lot longer to get better. But either way, I'll take them, you know, whatever stage they're in, because I think that we can make a huge difference and try to see them through those transitional stages.
One of the things, too, that I was thinking about as you're saying this is about, I'm curious in terms of just within the medical profession, whether, you know, because like you were saying that a lot of times that, you know, older people with addictions are abusing medications that are prescribed to them. I'm curious about whether you think that there needs to be sort of more awareness, just even on the part of sort of general practitioners about, you know, when someone comes in complaining of pain or just being aware of what they're giving, you know, what medications they are giving to older adults in the same way that they would maybe younger people.
Sure, and I think that's a great point. I think we as medical professionals have to take that responsibility, especially if we're taking care of the geriatric population. But there's a lot of warning when we're giving patients, especially older patients, these type of drugs, whether it's anti-anxiety agents or sleeping pills. Especially we know that they all have interactions with many of the other medications they may be on, and that they are extremely sensitive to these medications, more so than the younger patients. And I think we as medical professionals need to have more education about that and just need to pay more attention in general about what we're giving and how many pills we're giving at a time and making sure we're seeing these patients in follow-up. And perhaps if the patient lets us talk to their family members about how they're doing, because a lot of times the patients will come in and say, oh, everything's fine, but we find out later on that things aren't fine. But there's a law preventing us from talking to family members unless right. the patient actually gives their consent. So that's one of the key things as well.
Yeah, I'm curious too, and maybe this is a, you know, this, I'm not sure, just sort of just curious about this. And I'm curious if what has maybe, if there's anything that has surprised you most about the work that you've been doing so far as you've, you know, as you've been working, you've done basically like the last 16 years or so, right? That you've been, been doing this. And I'm curious if there, any things that really have been stick out for you as.
Well, I think there's always surprises in this profession. You really, it never gets old because everyone has a story, and it's really trying to unravel that story and discover how the patient got to where they were and how they are now and what we can do to help them. But the biggest surprise really to me initially was that, that addiction, is every class of people. We see young people, we see old people, we see poor people, and we see people with all the means in the world who you would think has everything. And that's the biggest surprise is that addiction really affects everybody in every way.
So I'm curious too about whether in your work, do you also, I'm sure you also, you work with a wide range of population, you know, obviously the elderly, but also do you work also with, you know, with other people as well, with other
Absolutely.
Age groups?
No, we see everyone at Cliffside Malibu. We see adolescents, 18, 19, young adults, a lot of middle-aged people, but then the elderly as well. So it's a nice cross-section of society that we see. Again, we see patients in all socioeconomic statuses as well. And that's what really makes it interesting. And you can really see here that addiction cuts across all class lines, all social lines, and that it's something that affects us all.
Right. I think that, to me, that is one of the biggest things, you know, just prepping to do this show that it really, really opened my eyes to is how much we really do have this narrative about how there's just certain people that, you know, couldn't be addicted. You know, addiction is sort of this, it's something that happens to people in the back alleyways, you know, places we drive by in the lowest, you know, the lowest dregs of society. And of course, I'm being facetious, but that.
Of course.
Yeah. But that's really the furthest thing from the truth.
Exactly. And you'd be surprised. I'm surprised all the time. The patients that either walk into my office or walk into Cliffside Malibu, and you'd be very surprised as to those types of patients. High-profile patients, patients with great jobs, elderly patients who are, you know, grandmothers and grandfathers. It's amazing. I'm so privileged and honored that I can really try to turn these people's lives around and help them get back what they lost.
Yeah, it's really amazing, wonderful, you know, work that you're doing. I also, the other thing I was wondering too is, you know, thinking about the listeners is, let's say someone, you know, someone in their family, someone knows someone in their family and they're listening to this and they realize that that person may have a problem. What are the steps that someone's to take? What are some of the steps that people can take to even, you know, approach their loved one to maybe say, I'd like you to go to a place like Cliffside Malibu? How would somebody go about, you know, even broaching that conversation, let's say?
Again, that's a tough one. Some patients are ready and some patients aren't. You're going to get some resistance from some patients, and some patients will say, great, you know, I'd love to see what this is all about. One thing is to go ahead and give Cliffside Malibu a call and talk to the admissions director, and sometimes they can guide the family into the best approach because, again, there's no one approach. It really does have to be customized to the patient and where they are in their lives and where they are in their addiction. Sometimes it's helpful to have the family doctor on board. I actually fill both roles. I'm an internal medicine family doctor as well as an addiction doctor. So sometimes I have family members that come to me and say, I know that you can't tell me anything about my dad, but I need to tell you about what's going on at home. And then that could sort of let me lead that discussion when I call up the patient, say, hey, I'd like to see you for a follow-up or a checkup and see how you're doing. And then I sort of, you know, lead the conversation into what's been going on and how I think that they could get some help.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, I imagine too that are there older adults that you work with who really are surprised that they really don't understand that they don't even realize that they could be addicted, or that, you know, in other words, like they're surprised themselves about where they've ended up.
Oftentimes they do get surprised as to necessarily being labeled as an addict, and we kind of am careful about how we label it in the beginning. But I just say that we have a problem, and we have to supervise them getting down from their medication, because now it's the medication that's causing a lot more problems, and we sort of lead it down that path. A lot of them may have family members who have addiction problems. We do see this as a genetic predisposition for a lot of these patients as well. But a lot of times they see that it's not a problem because their doctors have been giving this to them. And then, again, that's what we try to teach them about.
Yeah, I really think if anything else, I think that's one of the most powerful things, is realizing that exactly, just because it's not, you know, they're not crossing the border into Mexico to go get these medications, that it's not. In fact, I think I was reading something about how that my understanding now is that the number one abused substance in this country really is prescription medication now, and not.
Oh,
it's, I think it's,
it
it's
is.
Actually
it's not,
surpassed.
It's not heroin. It's not cocaine. It's far surpassed by prescription medication from doctors.
Yeah, and so it would make sense that speaks volumes, because the people that are using the medical system the most, for the most part, are the elderly, and so it would make sense that would, and like you saying too about the piece about depression.
Yes. Absolutely. Loneliness, chronic pain, other medical conditions, which will lead down this pathway. Absolutely.
I guess sort of to wrap it up, I'm curious too about whether, with this piece about, obviously there's the physical, the physical side of addiction and so forth, but I'm curious too about sort of, do you find that, I'm curious about whether, you know, as let's say somebody who's an older person, you know, breaks free from an addiction, whether it opens up new possibilities, sort of new, I guess, sort of the spiritual side of it, or meaning or purpose side of it. I'm thinking about how so many elderly people are isolated and lonely. And
yeah, I think that when patients realize they have the problem and get better, it does open up a lot of great things for their life in terms of spirituality, in terms of their ability to give back. I've had older patients start becoming sponsors for younger people in AA and NA meetings. In leading groups, Cliffside Malibu, and other type facilities. And I think it gives them some new purpose as well when they find that through their problem they can help others. And I think that's a great thing.
Dr. Raskin, thank you so much for joining me today. And again, people can, if they're interested in learning more about you and about Cliffside Malibu, they can go to www.cliffsidemalibu.com, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the discussion.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So thank you, everyone, again, for listening. And this is Doug Foresta, Creating Change. Just say a couple things. I just want to thank Dr. Raskin again so much for coming on, and for all the great people at Cliffside Malibu. We're going to have Constance Scharf back. For those of you that remember, we had been talking to her about also about stages of change and about the trans-theoretical model and all this great stuff. So we're going to have Constance Scharf back on, too. And I would encourage you, if you have a loved one that is suffering from an addiction, to reach out to them. And you know, you can always, the people at Cliffside Malibu are great. I mean, they'll talk to you about what options you have. And again, you can check that out at www.cliffsidemalibu.com. I also want to encourage all of you to, I'm building up the Facebook page for the show, and I really want to continue the conversation there. So I'll have more information about the show, about guests, and about the topic. And that's at Facebook. You can go to, it's Creating Change with Doug, www.facebook.com, Creating Change with Doug, or you can just search Creating Change and you should be able to find it that way too. So I really appreciate that. Definitely would love to connect with you there. And also the other thing I also wanted to let people know is that I also have a blog at psychotherapy.net. Where I do reflections about the show and share more there. And you can go to www.psychotherapy.net and go to blogs. I actually think my blog is on the front of psychotherapy.net currently. So if you scroll down, you'll see it there. But I want to thank everyone again for listening to the show, and for and also all to the people at Empower for making it possible. And we're going to have some great – we have some other great guests coming up. Thomas Moore, author of Care of the Soul, is going to be returning in December. We have some other Constance Scharf will be back, as well as some other great surprise guests. So more about that to come. So thanks, everyone, again for listening. And remember, keep creating. The world needs your gifts. This is Doug Foresta, Creating Change. Until next time.